Omaha Public Radio, KIOS-FM, presents another luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club. On today's program, we'll hear a panel discussion on the topic, The Mean Streets of Omaha, How to Fight the Violence. This program was recorded by KIOS-FM on Thursday, November 1st, 2007, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speakers and do not represent those of the Omaha Press Club, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the program and the panel is Rob McCartney from KETV Channel 7.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Omaha Press Club for another one of our noon forums. My name is Rob McCartney from the Press Club's Education Committee. These forums, as you know, are presented by the Education Committee, regularly examine issues facing the community. Well, the issue of crime is certainly not new, but it is certainly top of mind. For example, you heard and read the reports this summer. Omaha had 31 shootings in 31 days. That was the month of July every day. Let me throw these numbers at you. The violence has continued. I just got these from the Omaha Police Department yesterday. Through September of this year, there have been 26 homicides, 150 forcible rapes, 603 robberies. It's 21 more than last year. 1,199 aggravated assaults, 89 more than last year. Now, these are what police list as violent crimes. They say they've cleared 52% of them this year, higher than the national average. Question is enough being done? Is that enough? What about all the shootings, all the gun crimes? The mayor's office proposed and the council passed changes to the gun laws. So now, and they're geared mainly towards juveniles, anyone of any age can be prosecuted for giving a gun to a minor. Penalties are increased for minors in possession of a weapon. Their second offense goes up from 60 days to 6 months in jail. And most guns used in crimes will be destroyed, not just confiscated. However, guns that are stolen, there was an amendment put on there, so if the guns were stolen, they can be returned to their rightful owner. Again, question is enough being done to make our streets safer? I'd like to introduce my colleague at KETV for our discussion today, Ben Gray. Ben is longtime host for decades of Kaleidoscope and has been keeping his finger on the pulse and has been closely watching the situation throughout Omaha. And I treasure his opinion on this more than anyone else's. And Ben, also, Ben, you want to come up here? Ben brought a couple of guests with him, and also we'll introduce our panel to you.
Thanks, Rob, thank you all for coming down a little bit to share with us and to talk about a very important issue, one that I think is paramount in our community. And I think if we don't address it, there will be a significant price to pay for what should happen in North Omaha, but probably will not happen because people are not willing to invest as long as there is significant violence that goes on in specifically the North Omaha community, but other areas of town as well. We want to have a discussion today to talk about not just, you know, the statistical data that reflects what crime is doing and what is going on in this city as it relates to other parts of the country, but we also hope that we will get an opportunity to talk with you about solutions and part of what you all can do to help work with young people, to help understand the situation that we are in, and to understand clearly that it is not hopeless. But we do require a lot of work, a lot of boots on the ground. This is what it's going to take to get that accomplished. I brought with me today a couple of gentlemen who, one I've known for a shorter period of time than the other. To my far right is Robert Penn. I don't know how much you all may remember about Robert, but in the late 80s and the early 90s, Robert was considered to be one of the kingpins of drug distribution in the Omaha community. He was a member of the Crips street gang, and he was an individual that I went to his home, as a matter of fact, to talk to him about, you know, how we solve these problems, because I do not think that we can get at this or solve this without addressing and dealing with and talking to and sitting down and being face-to-face with some of the people who are involved in this activity. Most individuals, and I was one of them, most individuals who are involved in criminal behavior or bad activity don't want to do it. They would prefer to do something else. But they have felt for a considerable period of time that society has locked them out for whatever reason. And we need to address the feeling that people have been locked out. We've not addressed, we've not talked about, we've not shared with each other the issues of racism that exist, that we need to be honest and open about, that we need to talk about. Part of what I see as a major problem in this community, in this nation, is that we, as people of various backgrounds, find ways not to talk to each other. It's not convenient. It's not safe. It is, we come up with all kinds of excuses, but we are living in a country where our infrastructure is failing, where our schools are crumbling, where there is all kinds of crime and other activities that need to be addressed immediately, but it's not being done for various reasons. And a lot of those reasons have to do with us not trusting each other, with us not talking to each other, with us not really coming to grips with the issues of institutional racism and how it has affected not only black people but white people. We need to have those discussions. We need to have that open dialogue if we're going to be successful in solving some of the problems we face. Robert is here to share with you some of his background and also to talk about with you as well as some solutions. Ollie Perryman is also here. Ollie comes from California, and Ollie was one of what many people would describe as an OG, an original gangster, who was in California at the time drugs first flooded the market and were being distributed, in some instances, by our own government. And we need to share those thoughts, those beliefs, that part of the discussion. So we hope that today is going to be an honest, open, clear dialogue and an understanding of what the issues are and how you all can be successful in solving some of these problems.
Rob, thank you. Thanks, Ben. Also on our panel, Martha Hoffman-Godert. She's with Metro OBGYN. She's an adjunct at UNO. She's been awarded a grant for a service learning project at the Omaha Street School for its youth empowerment program. And so we're going to get her viewpoint also on the situation out there and, more importantly, what can be done. I was telling these guys, I said, what I really like to pull from this today is kind of an action plan that everybody can take with them, something that they can do to make a difference. Whether it's some kind of fire, some kind of spark that's lit, that's great. Any one of us, whether it's helping out a project that's coming up or just talking to somebody, spreading the word. That's what we're looking to get from this situation. Who would like to go first? Ollie, do you want to? How about, you're sitting close to me, so we're going to. I want to mention also, if you have any questions, if you can just raise your hand, I'll come over and I'll get them from you. Otherwise, you can scribble them down on your placard on your car. Gary's going to bring them up. Okay, Gary will bring them up. And we can have questions for the panel, and we can present those later on. Ollie, I want to ask you, I'll start it with you, if you can just tell us, Ben gave a little bit of your background, but tell us a little bit more about your background and what you're seeing in Omaha today.
Okay, first off, I was born and raised in Los Angeles. All my life is in Los Angeles, but I've been in and out of jail from the time I was 9 years old. I can remember my first crime at nine, and it just soared to different things. I started getting off in the gangs when I was about 11 years old. I mean, just everything around me was at the time, it wasn't hectic, but I succumbed. I didn't know nothing about peer pressure. And we don't know nothing about peer pressure. You tend to fall in certain traps, and, you know, you tend to go to the left instead of veering to the right. So, you know, all my life, I was just always to the left, doing things I had no business doing, you know, like just a gangbang, getting kicked out of school, fighting. But eventually, like I said, going in and out of job, in the camps, YAs, been in prison 3 times. I did 12 and a half years in the feds. Just got the feds in 2004. All right. You know, so I did a lot, sold a lot of crack, brought a lot of crack out here. I did a lot of things that was negative. But at the moment, I'm trying to correct my wrongdoings. I work down at NCAP. I work with the youth every day. But I'm trying to start my own program. So I'm trying to find some kind of way for me right now to right this wrong. I've been doing bad all my life. I'll be 50 Saturday. So I've been messing up for a long time. So right now I'm trying to correct that. So that's why, you know, I'm up here. That's why I'm associated with being, trying to associate with positive people. At the same time, get my program off the ground, because that's what I feel needs to be done. Something needs to be done with these kids. I work with them every day. And they say they don't like school. They can't find no job. Jobs is hard. And the thing is, if we had a vehicle where we can, a, provide jobs for these youngsters, because that's what I try to do every day, provide some kind of job, some type of outlet. All right, so that's a, I don't know, I know it's hard, but like I said, we need help out there. We need help out there. You know. Rob.
My name is Robert Penn. I'm here basically to appeal and communicate with other people who are in higher echelons of the society that may not understand the reality of the environment where people like myself and Ali have been developed in. And the reason why I decided to communicate with people in other areas of the society, because you're a lot closer to the people who are in positions of leadership. And the ugly things that you're witnessing or you're hearing in areas that they call ghettos all across the country is a result of a social engineering experiment, a project. And the individuals who are in positions of leadership are not morally developed. They're infants. Their whole thinking is built upon consumption. They're self-proclaimed gods, and y'all need to remove them. And that is a reality. The same individuals who are doing ugly, filthy things in the community, who are murdering each other senselessly, these same individuals can be praised in Iraq if they do it for corporate greed. And so what we have in this country is we have what I would call a divine contradiction. America is not really opposed to crime. It's how you do it. Some people commit their crimes with velvet gloves on, so it's okay. George Bush, who was a convicted felon, he commuted a sentence of another convicted felon, Scooter Libby. Do you really think the children don't see that? He was convicted. Basically, what I would call from the streets a hit. Isn't that a murder plot? Yeah. That's criminal action. He should get my old jail cell, but he won't. Certain individuals can commit crimes with impunity. And that is a reality of America. So all the little drug dealers, the crack dealers, and all these people that are obvious, we can go and get them and round them up. But the real criminals, the ones that wear the velvet gloves, wear suits and ties, they get away with it. Y'all need to start profiling white males over the age of 40 smiling on their way to the bank. Those are the real criminals. Not the gangbanger on the 5 o'clock news. He's a symptom of the real disease. And again, y'all need to look up instead of down. And that's what I'm here to discuss. The truth. I have nothing to lose. I spent most of my life as being a criminal. And I know one when I see one. Cheney, he's a criminal. He's OG in my book. Expert criminal. And y'all really know this. But how he does it, that's why y'all allow him to get away with it. He wears velvet gloves. Actually, I'm not as good a criminal as him. I take my hat off to him. But that's what I'm here to discuss, the truth.
I'm going to let you go. I've already talked a little
while. I'd like to talk a little bit about a project that started from a dream and really making a difference with youth in North Omaha. I asked my children, because I have worked in North Omaha now for about 12 years, what I could do that might make a difference with kids. The violence makes me as a mother, just feel pain of other women, other aunts and mothers and grandmothers, sisters and girlfriends who have lost young men in their families. And they said, why don't you just parent the way that you parented us, by doing things, taking us camping and hiking into the Olympics and pushing us with our education. And so I had been doing health physicals at the Omaha Street School campus. It's called Turning Point, for a little program called Youth Empowerment Program. Miriam and Melvin Blair pretty much started an after-school program for kids ranging from grade school all the way to 21. And it may sound a little odd to have an after-school program. In my the group that I'm working with is 17 to 21 or so. But it's a need of still needing to be parented, to be encouraged, to get over this idea of fearing each other. And so I wrote a grant to the Midwest Consortium for Service Learning in Higher Education. And it's a group that really takes college kids and puts them into situations where they're serving. We will not learn from each other without serving each other. And what I have now is a group of after school, age 17 to 20, half Caucasian women from Clarkson College, half kids from Street School Youth Empowerment Program, and that group is growing weekly. They show up weekly, and their numbers increase. What we have been doing is working on a project of reconciliation. And I started first hard-hitting by bringing in the Conference for Inclusive Communities, and that used to be, I think, the Committee on Christians and Jews. Spencer Terry came in and worked with us about eight isms of our prejudices, from sexism, classism, racism, ageism, ableism, all down the line. And what we did on the very second day of our meeting was start to address some of the problems that are really classism. And so we were in a line out on this beautiful green campus at Turning Point. And he would say, those who identify with having parents who have graduated from college, walk forward. Notice who's with us. Notice who's not with us. And you very carefully weeded out the fact that I have a lucky tick. Isn't that what Warren Buffett would say? I have a lucky tick. I was born into a family who was not only, my parents were college educated, but my grandmother had her master's degree in 1906 from University of Chicago. And you have this division that all of a sudden these Caucasian girls from higher socioeconomic classes get that feeling of looking back at the group that's not with them, and it hits them. It is an experience that I couldn't teach any better than that. And then as we proceed on further and further into, for those who identify with violence, come forward. Well, now we have black and white on the line. What about those who identify with issues of substance abuse in your family or in those closest to you or in yourself? Well, then now we have everybody except one little Asian girl who's back on the line. There's no problems in her family. But you see, we need to identify the things that bring us closer together, not the things that are making us a difference. And what I find after the third week of working together, that these brave young kids, they're laughing 200 times more than adults, okay? They teach with words that I could never bring to the forefront. When Tyrone says to the girls, I go to sleep by the sound of gunfire, there's a pin that could be dropped in the room. I couldn't teach that any better. When the Council Bluffs girls have asked them to go over and see the Black Angel, you know, in the park, then they tell them the next week that they did go over and they were in front of the statue and somebody drives by and says to them, you're going to go to hell. And they bring that story back, and it hits their hearts when they experience that these are young men and women that they've met and know, and they see these issues of prejudice. So originally I thought this was going to be a reconciliation project, and I asked the participants, what do you want to do? They said, we need to make money. So I called up my dearest and nearest supporter, Jim Godert, my husband's chair of construction engineering down at UNO, and we're doing a construction project. We're making Adirondack chairs, and they're going to be a big item to sell. And the creativity and the ability to show up and the ability to relate to each other is bravery beyond anything. It's not divided according to color or class in this instance. It's according to human beings that show up and have the ability to relate to each other. And that's where we've started it, what we call SEDOTO, See One, Do One, Teach One, SEDOTO Project.
We got a bunch of questions coming up.
Bunch of questions.
Go
okay.
Go ahead, Ben. You want to jump in there? Go ahead.
I just want to go into different. There were a couple of things I want to say. Let's get some questions in because I don't want them to. I want people to have an opportunity to have their questions.
Okay, and we'll try to go through these. Robert, for you, what is or was the social experiment you referred to?
It is an area where mostly people of color live, or poor people. And what it is basically is it's like an economic prison. And they've even done this. Psychologists have done this with rats. If I have a controlled area and I put 25 rats in this controlled area, I put enough cheese in there for 10 rats. Then I add some drugs to that environment. What will happen is those rats will be reduced to basic self-preservation. And then the strong will survive. And they'll form little cliques and little groups and things of that nature. They get more aggressive. They get more violent because everything is limited and scarce in this controlled environment. The ghetto is, like I said, a social engineered project. That's why they call a lot of these areas where the people live project units. Look up the word project in your dictionary. And that's what it is. There's enough wealth in America and resources. The whole world serves us. There shouldn't be any ghettos in America. And the reason that there are is because there are people who are in positions of leadership who are controlling the resources. That's my answer to the social engineering project.
Along those lines, name the most important change necessary to reduce the violence out there. Robert, we heard from you, Holly.
Well, right now I'm working on a project through NCAP. And the project is really dealing with first-termers, okay? So my project is they have a space above Goka, but it used to be Goka, now it's called Inca. They have a space above Goka. So my project is try to get 30 youth up there, renovate this space, put 30 first termers up there, two in a room, and have each one of these, each youth responsible for the next youth. And if you mess up, he gonna get punished, so to speak, not punished, but you know you might lose your privileges to do something, right? But the group's supposed to be, I will take you to school, bring you back, you do your homework. It's like a controlled environment, like prison. So the thing is, if you want to go to prison, I'm going to put you going to be in this controlled environment to try to break that mindset. See what I'm saying? Since you're the first term, to break the mindset, to put some more structure back into his life. Go to school, come home, do your homework, no sagging clothes, respect, clean up, that type of environment, and you get rewarded for everything you do. So on the weekend, if you want to take a pass, you got to earn everything. Everything is earned to try to break, like I say, break your mindset of thinking that crime is cool. Stealing cars is not cool. Burglary is not cool. That's not cool. But if you want to do that, that's what I say. But if you want to do that, I'm going to put you over here that you check this out. Because this is what they do up in prison. Everything is controlled. So if this is what you like, I'm going to show you that this is not cool for at least 90 days and release them back to their mother, but at the same time have their parents involved, because a lot of these youth, they don't respect their mothers, their parents, something is going on. She may be working a job to take care of four children and got this one going crazy, but the other three is doing good, so she ain't got this, you know, she won't have this time. So I want to still, and at the same time, instill a program where the parent is involved in every aspect of this child to try, like I say, reconfigure his thinking, so to speak. That's what I'm involved right now. So right now, it's like I said, I teach chess every day because that's what I play chess. So I try to teach chess. I'm looking for jobs. So that's what's needed out there, man. Somebody needs to invest in our neighborhood and trust us, you know, with the investment, because we know what's best for our neighborhood. You from the outside looking in. I've been there. I know what we need. He know what we need. It's like I said, we have no jobs. Everybody I talk to want to work, want to do better, but they can't. Transportation's lacking. I mean, everything. You know, so people need to, like I say, wake up. Instead of looking down, look up. It's rough out there. It's rough. Like I say, and it is a dog-eat-dog world out there. Need jobs, man. Need money. That's all I can say.
If I can add something to that, Rob. You know, most of you, if you don't know, I'll tell you also, I'm the chairman right now, the African-American Achievement Council, which is an organization that was started by the Omaha Public Schools to address the issues that relate to the achievement gap between black students and their non-black peers. I'm also a task force chairman with the Building Bright Futures effort that is going on. Also a part of the Empowerment Network, which is an organization of grassroots African-Americans who are trying to make a difference in North Omaha and in the Omaha area where they live. And what Bright Futures and the Empowerment Network have come to grips with is how daunting and how difficult this task is going to be. There is no one solution. There is no one thing that you can do. What people need to understand and recognize is that there are, you know, you need to find an area of expertise that you are comfortable with, or an area where you feel that you can make a contribution, and you immerse yourself and involve yourself in that. Whether it be tutoring, whether it be mentoring, whether it be in the school district, in classrooms, monitoring, you know, what goes on in the classroom and those sorts of things. I mean, there are some significant issues that we face that don't get addressed and need to be addressed. Mm-hmm. The Douglas County has the highest STD rates in the country, sexually transmitted disease rates in the country, We have the poorest black children in the country. We are the third poorest African-American community in the country. All of these things, we sit on a Superfund site. How many of our young people are victims of lead poisoning, which leads to violent activity and diminished capacity to learn? We don't know the answer to that because we're still now addressing the issues of lead that affect our children and affect our community and have been for a number of years. Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't know the answer to those things because we're right at the threshold of dealing with that. And then even with that, we have a lead cleanup process that cleans up the soil but doesn't do anything with the house where most of the lead poisoning comes from. So here you spend $15,000, $18,000 to clean up the ground area around a house that's got lead-based paint, and you leave the house with the lead-based paint. I don't know what kind of sense that makes to spend those millions of dollars to do that, just to have to come back in 3 or 4 years and clean up the lead that exists in those homes. We have a significant, and as people look at, you know, what it takes in education, I mean, you know, we have young people who are bored with education because we're trying to teach young people using 1950s tactics who are 2010 children, who know computers better than we do, who are multitaskers better than we are. But we're trying to educate them using tactics that we use to gain our educations, and these young people are bored with what we're doing. There is nothing in a lot of the minority schools where we have books and textbooks and other things that reflect people that look like them. If you're not going to see people that look like you in any of the textbooks, in any of the books that you read, in any of the curricula that you go through,
then how do you feel like you're going to be a part of something? You know, I mean, these are all just, and I'm just being, and I'm just touching on what many of the issues are that we have to address as a council, as an empowerment network, as a Bright Futures organization. We do that, and the other thing we do, and Senator Cruz is with us and, you know, here in the audience, and Senator Cruz knows full well the role the state needs to be playing in terms of education and the fact that they don't do that. We have government officials whose intent is, in my judgment, to undermine public education. Right now, the Omaha Public Schools is dealing with 5 different audits. 5. Some of them they have never, ever had to go through before. Now, is it a coincidence that that's happening at the same time that this district faces, that this district is undergoing depositions because they filed a lawsuit against the state because the funding formula is broken? They want to try and do something to fix the funding formula so that more dollars come into this poor district to have a better situation where they can educate children. Do these audits happen to happen at the same time that these depositions are going on? And what kind of man hours does it take to do all of these kinds of things with audits and so forth? And what does it take from the classroom? What does it take from young people? I mean, we have significant, serious issues. We have limited dialogue. We have these discussions for an hour or an hour and a half or 2 hours or whatever the case may be, but we still don't get at the heart of the matter. Bright Futures and the Empowerment Network are just now starting to recognize that, first of all, we don't talk to each other, which is bad. We don't discuss what our differences are and try to reach conclusions about those differences, which is bad. And we are ignoring public education, of which we fall somewhere in the neighborhood between 8th and 12th in the world in terms of educating our young people. So not only are we not educating black, brown, and red children, we're not educating our white children to the extent that they can compete in a global society. We need to fix this stuff.
Education, one. Also, we've discussed economics. Anyone can answer this. Is there any assistance for employers when they're thinking of hiring a prospective employee who has a troubled past?
They used to have a program. They used to have a program where the company that would hire an ex-felon would get a tax break. I think they cut that off. So employers need to have incentives to hire ex-felons. Because I know a lot of ex-felons don't mind working, but it's the employer. Oh, you got a criminal background. But I feel if the employer had, like I said, an incentive to hire this ex-felon, everything would work out to everybody's advantage. That's my answer to that one.
Society as a whole needs to make up its mind what it wants to do. You know, a picture of a cake is not a cake because they simply don't taste the same. Okay, if individuals are coming out of prison and they're seeking employment, they are letting the society know that they are willing to participate in the social structure and they want to work and live honestly and decently. If they didn't make that decision, they wouldn't be seeking employment. And so when we have people who would push them back or reject them, then what other alternative do they have? You go back to the life of crime. Why? You got to eat. You got to survive. So society as a whole needs to make a decision on what they're going to do. Is a person who is a convicted felon, are they convicted forever? What do y'all want to do with them? Y'all want them to go back to being criminals? Or do you want them to participate in a social structure like everyone else and get up and do what they need to do and contribute to the rest of the society? If they're seeking a job, they've already came to the realization that I need to participate with everyone else. Let me get up. Let me be responsible. Let me provide for myself. I don't want to take from someone today. I don't want to violate anyone else. And then people tell them no. Well, what other alternative do they have?
Martha, is this what you're saying?
I really see it a little differently. I don't know if you know, but I have a clinic at Open Door Mission. I run a little clinic as a family nurse practitioner there. And that is the most integrated site I've ever seen. people from all walks and backgrounds, colors, religions. And what I see as a very basic aspect of everyone's experience in that is substances. And to take from a little hopeful message, I know Iowa just really put a stop to a lot of the meth by having a consortium of not only law, drug court, police, social workers, healthcare workers, teachers, but they made a real impact with getting together, zero tolerance. And the very same thing should be happening in our all of our city, zero tolerance for substances, because out of that comes almost every one of these crimes is associated either with substances or some kind of untreated mental illness. And so this is across all societies. What I'm seeing of a line that I can draw on the map of a segregated area, segregation makes us sick. A healthcare indicator, segregation is right up there correlating with every adverse outcome that you have, whether it's perinatal, heart disease, diabetes, hypertension. And so that is one of the issues that I think in our discussion, it's not just about our differences. It has to be in our similarities. It has to be that we look at these children with eyes that are colorblind, that we see their potential. 50% of the young men who are on death row are there because they have murdered their mother's abuser, okay? And so it goes so deep into our society, but there is hope. And when I go west and tell them what I'm needing, the shop teacher at Elkhorn High School, I need a pattern for Adirondack chairs. And Tom Baumert hopefully gives me all of these patterns, and have 12 students running around making them with their bandsaw. People understand and get this. Your children being murdered are like my children being murdered. We are one society. And the magic marker that happens on the map in Omaha is not decent. It's not the right thing. But we don't need to have fear about what is around the corner. It's a consortium, and the churches are a main aspect of being able to provide after-school parenting, mentoring. It doesn't have to be out of a criminal justice system. It needs to be proactive before these things happen.
You know, we can, I mean, I can, and this is part of what discussion is all about.
Mm-hmm.
And we can talk about our similarities, and we mm-hmm. need to talk about those, and I don't disagree with that. But mm-hmm. someone asked me one time, a white journalist asked me one time when I was at a black journalist convention, am I a black man who happens to be a journalist or a journalist who happens to be black? Okay, and I looked at them and I said, what do you see first? And in every single instance, I mean, what do you see first?
Mm-hmm.
The first thing you see is a black man. You know, so it's not, while we want to celebrate our similarities, and we should, and we mm-hmm. need to, and we need to get past that,
mm-hmm.
we need to get past the pain of what has divided us.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to be realistic about how that pain came about. You know, because we sit, and I focus a lot on education, because education has to be the key. But we have to even be honest about education. And we have to be honest about test scores and where they come from and why they, mm-hmm. And why these ACT, these standardized achievement tests and what they were really designed to do. I mean, these tests were originally designed mm-hmm. in the early 1900s, and they were designed in the military, and they were designed by the military not too much to determine who is qualified to be in. It was designed to keep the Jews out. Mm-hmm. I mean, we need to be honest about that. That's what, and those same kinds of tests were now moved to the street mm-hmm. where they're continually used. I mean, one of the director of, or the guy who kind of runs the Empowerment Network continues to ask a question that people don't want to answer,
mm-hmm.
and I know why they don't want to answer it, but he says between around 1973 and 1988, we closed the achievement gap. From that period, from 1988 mm-hmm. on, that achievement gap starting to widen, and it has stayed wide.
Mm-hmm.
What has happened? Number one, we stopped. Dollars disappeared from monitoring the test makers
mm-hmm.
to make sure that they are not writing culturally biased tests,
mm-hmm.
and we need to address that. The other thing is we went away from our war on poverty, and we engaged in a culture of consumption and greed and so forth. And so now we have these achievement gaps that now exist where they were closed, because this government has changed its focus from the war on poverty and doing all of the necessary things. So I agree with you that we need to, we ought to celebrate our similarities, but we can't do that until we have addressed honestly our differences and how we got to where we are. I mean, Italian people, Jewish people, Irish people didn't become honorary white people until like after World War II. I mean, we need to be honest about these things. We need to talk about it, because that's what happened. You know, they didn't become honorary white people until after World War II with the FHA program, the GI Bill that fostered. I mean, prior to that, about 15% of people owned their homes. After that, a significant number, more than 50%, started owning their homes. But those programs primarily locked black people out. And so when people say that they pulled themselves up by their bootstraps, no, you didn't. You had a government program that helped you do it. And while you, while your ancestors were doing it, other ancestors that looked like me were being locked out of the process. We need to talk about those things. You know, if we're going to get to the honesty that we need to get to, and come to the solutions that we need to get to, we need to talk about that.
Okay, one of the other issues on there, we're discussing mean streets. Obviously, that has to do with crime control and not necessarily prevention, but also prosecution, if you will. We have a couple of questions dealing with police. What extent is more police on the street an answer to the violence problem? And also, hand in glove, don't snitch. We've heard about that. People don't want to come forward. How much of a problem is people not snitching preventing police from solving crimes? You know that, Robert?
First of all, the whole the reason why the Stop Snitching campaign came along is there was a generation of people who watched older guys my age. They watched their mothers being arrested. They watched their cousin, their brother, their uncle, everyone be arrested for crack conspiracy. And with the crack guidelines, the government doesn't need any evidence. They say that you're selling it. They take one guy. He's facing 10 to life, and it's like putting a gun to his head. So he has to say anything to save his life. And so they watched a whole generation of us get gaffled up and thrown in prison. And so they started to stop the snitching campaign. And it's their way of saying we need to protect our underground economy, because they're eating crumbs. And the snitching and the telling and all these type of things were affecting the crumbs that they were using to eat. And yet, one of the things y'all need to understand with these conspiracy laws, they have been used as a preliminary test in the ghettos. Pretty soon, there will be conspiracy laws, and the die is already cast with the Patriot Act. You have no habeas corpus rights. The government does not have to present any evidence. There will be no trial. They simply say you are a terrorist. That's it. They drop you down a dark hole indefinitely. Now, this has started with the crack laws. Now it will be a national law. And pretty soon we'll have a global plantation around here.
And again, look at, as Rob talks about the crack laws, I mean, you all recognize that on the books now, there are mandatory minimums in federal prison for crack cocaine, you know, distribution. A person who has five rocks of cocaine will get significantly more time than a person that has 500 pounds of cocaine. Is that fair? Is that just? Do we need to address that? We called crack cocaine the deadliest drug ever, and now we have methamphetamine, which harms people indefinitely, which harms their minds, their brains indefinitely.
Question for anyone. Why would someone who never travels to North Omaha, who never travels to that part of the community, care?
because I'll give you a perfect example. When I have never, ever in my life, and I'm 57 years old, ladies and gentlemen, I'm proud to say that, because there was a time when there were some things that I was involved in when people thought that I wasn't going to make it past 20, 21, let alone get to 57. But, you know, I have never, ever not known about drugs and prostitution in my community, ever. Okay? Now, when drugs first came into my community, that was where it was supposed to stay. Okay? It wasn't supposed to get out to the white community. It wasn't supposed to get out to suburbia. It wasn't supposed to, it was supposed to stay in the black neighborhoods or the dark neighborhoods and so forth. And what happens now is, you know, and what I'm saying, to make a long story short, what happens to us today is going to happen to you tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. That's a good
There's
point.
No question about that. No question. So if you don't solve it here today, you're going to have to deal with it in your own communities tomorrow. And you're already dealing with it, with the meth. You're already dealing with the stealing. You have, I mean, crime has gone up in terms of burglaries in the western part of this city faster than anything. You know, so if it doesn't, if you don't address it here today, if you don't address it in North Omaha today, and this is why you should care, if you don't address it in North Omaha today, you're going to be addressing it in West Omaha tomorrow, and in some ways you already are.
Bob, this God said for us to care. That's the bottom line. If you look at it that way, that's a godly thing to do. It ain't wrong to care about somebody that you don't know. You're supposed to. If you go to church and read your Bible tells you that. You're supposed to help your neighbor. And if you don't do that, you're not doing what the Bible say. Bottom line, man, you're supposed to care. Supposed to. You automatically. If we ain't got, and you got, you're supposed to kick, back. That's your job. That's the job on this earth. If I had, I would give back. It's no big deal to give back. You're not going to be looked down upon to give back. Hope you're not looking for no accolades. You're supposed to do it because you're supposed to do it because you can. That's my answer to that.
And it's good business. It's good business to have all of the children in this community safe. There are a couple of things I wanted to comment on. One is that when I started working in North Omaha, I was had evening clinics. And Mel Washington, I don't know if you know Amel, but he has for years and years really been a figure for young men with wrestling. And he would walk me out to my car every evening and look in the back seat and make sure I was safe. I have had my back covered, so to say, in North Omaha by people that I've served. I have never seen a young black woman labor alone. I've seen white girls labor alone. I have never had a feeling that I couldn't ask from the community to respond to somebody who needed food or housing that night or a safe spot. And I think we do learn from each other. It is the right thing to do. And the younger generation gets this. This new millennial generation, when we have these intergenerational dialogues where you have the great generation that served in World War II and grew up in the Depression, and they're hearing this new generation talk about the importance of our environment and caring for each other and global economies and reducing what they think is important in their ownership and caring for each other, this great generation gets tears in their eyes because it's the same spirit coming back again. Our own children say, don't use that word, mother. Think about reducing here. They're better than we are. They're less angry than we are. Part of the project that I started was working with some biofeedback, trying to work with some of our issues of anger. We're so not only afraid but angry still. And it comes from a lot of distrust, rightfully so. But I think the new generations, I think they have much more global view of what our society should be.
And let me just say one other thing real quickly. Mm-hmm. Rob, you know, as Rob mentioned at the top of the show, Rob and I are colleagues. Mm-hmm. We're friends, and we also give each other grief. And we do it regularly. And Rob always talks about, among other things, my age, my football team, and other things, because I happen to be an Ohio State Buckeyes fan. But You know, mm-hmm. and you will hear, and yeah, I know you all be, and I'll probably get run out of here.
I have your back.
But, you know, when you hear the show, mm-hmm. for over 25 years, I've been producing mm-hmm. Kaleidoscope. You know, for over 34 years, I've been working in the newsroom. That entire time, I've been in North Omaha. Mm-hmm. For that whole time, I have never seen, and been in journalism the whole time, I have never seen nor been the victim of a violent crime. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of them, a couple of sessions ago, I use poetry a lot. Maya Angelou was a pretty special woman. But one of the reasons that we in West Omaha need our North Omaha neighbors is because it's called Weekend Glory. Have you ever read this from Maya Angelou? She said, some ditzy folks, they move into condos up over the ranks, pawn their souls to the local banks. Buying big cars they can't afford, riding around town, acting bored. And if they want to learn how to live life right, they ought to study me on Saturday night. My job at the plant ain't the biggest bet, and I pay my bills and stay out of debt. I get my hair done for my own self's sake so I don't have to pick and I don't have to rake. I take the church money out and head cross town to my girlfriend's house where we plan our round. We meet our men and go to a joint where the music is blues and to the point. People write about me. They just can't see how I work all week at the factory, get spruced up and laugh and dance and turn away from worry with a sassy glance. They accuse me of living from day to day. But who are they kidding? So are they. My life ain't heaven, but it sure ain't hell. And I'm not on top. I can call it swell. If I'm able to work, get paid right, have the luck to be black on Saturday night.
Okay, we need to come to a close here, and I'd like to do it by putting you all on the spot, if I may. Mm-hmm. Today we've discussed four E's, environment, education, economics, and empathy, if you will. Put them all in. What is the number one thing that we have to do as a society right now to end the violence or curtail the violence, if you will, make our streets safer? Just one thing, job one, as it were. Who wants to go first?
Get involved. Get involved. Call me. Find somebody. Find a way to get involved. We cannot save it by ourselves, but we can save it if we act together.
Robert?
The most simplest thing would be for the society to start developing people into human beings. People are not being developed into human beings. And that is the number one problem. There is no knowledge of self. Each individual should be taught about the power that each individual has as a human being. And we need to learn how to control ourselves. That's how I personally began to make a transition. People need to be developed into human beings.
I'm with Ben Gray. Invest. That's the only way to invest, and don't be scared to invest. People on the north side are willing to work. They don't like the violence. They don't like it as much as you do. I don't like it. I live over there. I'm tired of it. I'm fed up. You know, but I understand what these youth are going through. I see them every day. And all of them say the same thing. Man, I wish I had a job. It's rough out here. I got to do this. I got babies. Who gonna feed my children? Who gonna hire me? I've been in prison full time. Everybody says the same thing. Youngsters on up. Man, my mama on crack. My daddy on crack. Don't nobody care about me. I'm not gonna do that. Just so we have to get involved, because some of these youngsters, they giving up, man. They just throwing in a towel. Because they feel that nobody cares. So they take, like Rob was saying, put that little bit of cheese in there. There ain't no money on the north side. Everybody's like this. Just taking. But if you create an environment, an economical environment, you can work, taking will go away. Fact, give them jobs, taking murder rate, crime rate goes down automatically. Everybody wants to work. Every man wants to be able to take care of their children. Fact, just like every woman wants to take care of their children. But if a woman is working 16, 12 hours a day and only making $10 an hour and has four children and a rent is $750, you add that up. Somebody gonna get cut short. That's just not cutting it. And she ain't getting nothing but that much food stamps. So somebody gotta do it, and the little kid see the struggle his mama going through. He gonna step up to the plate. I gotta help moms. I got to. Mom's struggling. Mom tired. I see my mama tired. So I gotta go take. Because I'm tired of seeing my mama struggle. Gotta invest, man. Find something to invest in. Find something or someone to invest in, and the problem will slowly but surely dissipate. That's a fact. If you don't, crime will go sky high. That's another fact.
Martha.
I'd say just don't be afraid. There's a soul sickness that is in our society with our youth, and many of us, middle-aged too, that's not a color. It's a soul sickness of not that we die, but that we die like sheep with our dreams unfulfilled and with human hearts that haven't touched other people. What I need is not people to come and ladle out soup in the soup kitchen. I need people to come who have been tapped on the shoulder to invest in another human being's life and really get this idea, but there but by the grace of God go I. So that when you see these young women that are raising babies and needing time at home with them instead of putting their kids in daycare, to be thinking about how would I have wanted to be treated? How do I know the best way to raise kids, to get people involved? Don't be afraid, but get involved in whatever organization feels comfortable to you because you're so needed, and especially the great generation. Because the stories and the experiences mesh so well with this millennial group that I'm working with, 17 to 20. We need your wisdom.
In consideration of time restraints, we need to wrap up our forum now. Thank you. A ton of great questions, many great questions we didn't get to. Thanks to the panel, to all of you for coming today. Again, thanks for all coming. Have a great day.
You've been listening to a luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club. Today we've heard a panel discussion on the topic, The Mean Streets of Omaha, How to Fight the Violence. This program was recorded by KIOS-FM on Thursday, November 1st, 2007, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed were those of the speakers and did not represent those of the Omaha Press Club, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Special thanks to the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. The Omaha Press Club presents these noontime educational forums each month. The next forum will be held on Tuesday, November 13th at 12 noon. At that time, Omaha Mayor Mike Fahey will give a talk titled, Build It and They Will Stay. If you'd like to attend this or other future programs in the series, call the Omaha Press Club at 345-8008. These events are open to both members and non-members of the Omaha Press Club. The Omaha Press Club is located on the 22nd floor of the First National Center, 16th and Dodge, in downtown Omaha. Complete noon forum listings are available on the Internet. Visit our website at kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.